Hello and welcome to episode 87 of Linux After Dark. I'm Joe.
I'm Chris.
I'm Gary.
And I'm May.
Welcome back all. It's only been 2 weeks for everyone listening, but it's been a very long time since we last recorded, and we've had the holiday period, Christmas and New Year and all of that in between. And we've been chatting in our little Telegram group about our various tech wins and fails, and I thought I'd like to hear more about that, so let's talk about it now. So Gary, originally you said you weren't doing any tech stuff, but then you got roped into at least one thing.
Yeah, so originally I was visiting my in-laws in Ireland, and they didn't have a huge amount of tech in their house other than hooky Fire Stick and a couple of old Macs. So there's not really a huge amount to do there. So the only horror story I saw there is someone put a Wi-Fi extender through the wash, which was fun, but nothing to do with me. So that's fine. I thought that was going to be my level of tech support, was just laughing at this misfortune. But sadly, it wasn't, because I came back to the backlog of tech support that had happened in the 2 weeks that I was gone.
And it involved a Wise 5070.
It did, yes. So I gave my mum a Wise 5070 as a replacement for her aged Optiplex 780 desktop a while back. And I think I did mention it on the show. And that's been running Ubuntu 22.04 for the longest time. And I decided that, you know, it's probably long enough after the next LTS release that I should do the upgrade to 24.04, thinking that this was something I could just do through the console or through the UI and leave it to run while we ate Christmas dinner and then come back to it. But boy, was I wrong. And I think, Chris, you mentioned you'd had some horror stories with an Ubuntu upgrade as well.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it was just the paper cuts in the Ubuntu LTS upgrade process. And I could deal with it. It was absolutely fine. But had my mum got the pop-up to do the LTS upgrade and tried to go through it herself, I just don't think she'd have known what to answer to some of the questions.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, this config file is going to be overwritten by this one. Which one do you want to keep? Or this package, you know, library is orphaned. Is that okay? Should we remove it? Should we keep it? Or actually, and this could be the fault of the low power of the Wise 5070, the upgrader UI just saying that it wasn't responding and asking if I wanted to force quit it at random intervals, which, yeah, she would have probably gone, oh, it's frozen, force quit, and stopped her machine halfway through a dist upgrade, which probably wouldn't have been fun. But it to me just really felt symptomatic of why I'm so reluctant to give normal people, quote unquote, a Linux machine. Because if she'd just clicked yes to an upgrade, I think she'd have probably balked her system.
Yeah, I've got to say, Gary, I've done a few of those machines because they're running Ubuntu Mate like I used to, and it only has a 3-year support period. So I've gone through the same process. I did it in the CLI, but I sat there watching it fly by. And on some of the slower machines, it's pretty slow. And I'm looking at it thinking, do you know what? George Castro is probably right. Like, this is, what the hell is this? If this stops halfway through, I can fix it. I had a couple of machines that had only half a gigabyte for the boot partition because they had an encrypted root. That's not enough. Even if you clear out all the kernels, it's not enough to start. And even if you set it to XZ compression, which has been my get out, it's not enough to start. You have to go into the init RAMFS and change the configuration. So it is the bare minimum init RAMFS to get through the upgrade and all of those configuration changes. And then my wife's, she came to me today and said, there's no GIMP. I'm like, what the hell? It didn't even say anything about that. Like, obviously it probably went by in the process and in the output. And obviously I just installed it from apt, but I've got to say, I'm with you, Gary. Like, if you know what you're doing, yes, I can get through those issues, but yeah, if the GUI is crashing as well, everyone that I've given laptops to like this, they would think the same thing. It's crashed, and they would break their package manager. They'd boot the machine and they get dropped to a TTY, which is one of the scariest things for people when they're using a computer. So I'm with you 100%. It wasn't great.
It just felt like something that should be a lot more polished by now, right? Like, we've had LTS to LTS upgrades in the GUI for a really, really long time. And I just feel like, yes, okay, for people like us, it is really useful to say, I'm going to change this config file, or I'm going to remove this package, or this thing will be orphaned. But I just hoped that maybe it would be a bit more friendly to a normal end user.
Yes.
Well, while we're in the negative portion of the episode, let me just say this. Fuck Docker. Just fuck it. We decided that we were going to watch a film with the extended family on this massive TV. And so I thought, let me try plugging a laptop in and playing it off that directly. No, that didn't work because it's 4K. And even with GNOME, it was kind of a little bit choppy. And right, okay, that's not going to work. Right, so let's do Jellyfin then. And I thought, well, it's about time. I just bit the bullet and did it with Docker. So I go to the Jellyfin website and follow the Docker instructions. And it kind of works, but no hardware acceleration. Like, right, okay, And then, I remember Gary sent me a Docker Compose file for it. All right, what's this like Linux Server IO business? All right, so there's a different kind of patched version of it or whatever, a different Docker image. Let me try that. Same story. Either I am just incredibly thick or Docker fucking sucks because I could not get hardware acceleration working. Clearly, I'm just not reading the documentation properly and I'm a bit thick. But in the end, you know what I did? I installed Samba on a laptop, put the file that we wanted to watch there, used a Fire Stick with VLC, and it worked perfectly, asterisk, apart from slightly skipping frames whenever the subtitles changed. But nevertheless, good old-fashioned Samba and VLC did the trick for me, and fuck Docker. I don't know if I've said that enough times.
I'm convinced at this point that it's something that you're doing, or it's a permissions problem.
Or both.
Or both, because all that Docker image, or that Docker Compose file, rather, that I sent you is doing is bind mounting the device in dev DRI, whatever the Intel thing is. So as long as whatever you're running Docker as, which is probably root, can read that file or access that bind mount, it should be fine.
Yeah, I would be of the mind to think I'd like to see QuickSync in general working and not just start pointing the finger at Jellyfin. But it's always hard in these situations because we're in a Telegram group, like when Joe had his Wi-Fi issues. And you're like, I'm not Stretch Armstrong through the internet. Like, I can't get to the thing. Like, I have to rely on third-hand reports of what's going on. So it always can be a bit tricky. But I will admit that if you read the Jellyfin documentation directly, it is slightly obtuse. And if you've not dealt with QuickSync or hardware accelerated video playback or graphics monitoring, it's quite a lot, especially the official docs. The Linux Server IO container is fairly well documented, like a lot of them.
But the Linux Server IO documentation assumes a lot of knowledge.
Yes, that's fair. I think it's fair. And I think it's a community that's built around those Docker containers that takes a lot of their knowledge for granted.
I think that's the problem in documentation more generally, to be honest. Mm. There's often an assumption of knowledge that people don't necessarily have.
And I think that's a really difficult problem to solve, because if you did 100 level, here's what a container is, here's how the image is built for every single container, most people would just think the documentation was useless. Whereas, I suppose, like you say, the Linux Server IO documentation assumes you understand the basics of what a container is and the way that it bind mounts and the way that that device is passed through into the container. And for me, that's fine, right? Because I spend all day, every day dealing with this. But for you as someone who just wants QuickSync to work, it's a bit more difficult.
And although that was a fail, the win was very much, to me at least, old school Samba and VLC working. It was just trivial to do that. Just quickly install Samba on a laptop, chuck the file on there, and then VLC on the Fire Stick, connect to the Samba share, play the file, no problem. 4K, beautiful, crisp quality. The only issue was that the family insisted on subtitles. And for some reason, every time the subtitle changed, it would skip like one or two frames. And no one else noticed it apart from me, but it was just driving me mad to the point where I had to pause it and say, sorry, everyone, I'm going to have to turn the subtitles off because it's driving me mad. Oh, we've not noticed. Watch it a bit. Oh, we really need subtitles. Right, fine. And I've pointed it out. It'll drive you mad. Oh, no, you're such a perfectionist. We don't know what you're talking about. And like, I thought it would be all right because this movie was Jaws. And there's quite a lot of that, especially in the second half where there's no dialogue, except for these subtitles kept saying, intense music plays, menacing music plays. And every time it comes up, it just skips a couple of frames. And then they wanted to watch Jurassic Park a few days later. And I'm like, no, I'm not putting up with that skipping, I'm afraid.
Okay, this episode is sponsored by people who support us with PayPal and Patreon. Go to linuxafterdark.net/support for details of how you can support us too. Patreon supporters have the option to listen to episodes without ads like this. And it's not just this show. There's Late Night Linux for news, discoveries, audience input, and misanthropy. 2.5 admins about system administration. Linux Matters for upbeat, family-friendly adventures. Linux Dev Time about developing with and for Linux. Hybrid Cloud Show for everything private and public cloud. And Ask the Hosts for off-topic questions from you. You can even get some episodes a bit early. We've got a lot going on, and it's only possible because of the people who support us. So if you like what we do and can afford it, it would be great if you could support us too at linuxafterdark.net/support. So May, you just kept posting about plugging things in and them just working.
I can't stop winning. yeah. I bought a new Wi-Fi 7 access point from Unify, the AP7 Pro or whatever. And I plugged it in, didn't turn on. Realized it needs 48 volts, so their old 24-volt adapters don't work. So gave it the 48 volts that it wanted. And it came up. The mobile app asked, do you want to adopt this new thing? I said yes, and I had a new Wi-Fi. That was it.
Why can't everything just be like that?
That's broadly been my experience with that Unify stuff. It's pretty good, right? I had an issue just before Christmas, actually, at one of the sites I manage where the 24 or 12 volt PoE, whatever one you said it was, May, blipped on a switch. And this is an older 48 port Unify PoE switch. And all of the access points went offline because they were all the older AC access points. So we decided that the best course of action was, of course, not to replace the really expensive £500 switch, but to get an access point that uses normal 48 volt PoE. And again, yeah, similar to you, like, super old Unify setup, took the old one off the ceiling, managed to get my hands covered in the grease that the rubber coating had turned into over the 8 years it had been there, plugged in the Wi-Fi 7 one, put it back on the ceiling, clicked adopt, and the cafe had new Wi-Fi and everything just worked. It was really nice.
I know a few episodes ago we spoke about my looking for a unicorn. Guess what I bought?
Did you buy a Unify AP?
Yeah, I bought the Unify, the 6 Pro. Because it's a bit cheaper, the 7 is a little bit pricey and I don't really need it now. And yeah, just as I expect, I plugged it in, I deployed it, I set up the configs, it hasn't dropped. It's fine. It's exactly what I want. It covers the whole house. It gives me all the VLANs in one thing. We're definitely not sponsored by Unify, I can promise you, but it just is working. And we got some feedback after that episode, and that is my biggest problem, you know. There's some great devices out there, and MediaTek, which I said in the episode, are upstreaming open source work and they are funding OpenWRT developers. But there's still GitHub issues saying, you know, when someone leaves my house with a 5 gigahertz device, it doesn't disassociate properly and no other 5 gigahertz devices can connect until I reboot the access point. That's not acceptable level of standard. And even the people that wrote in said, you should try this. I'm running a snapshot. No, I'm not going to run a snapshot build of an open source project for my incredibly crucial Wi-Fi. I did deploy for my sister a MediaTek router, but I'm not using the Wi-Fi on it. It's the same SoC as the OpenWRT one. It was 40 quid. I flashed it. It's incredible for the price. It does everything, but I would not trust its Wi-Fi at all. It has an external access point.
On the flip side, I have just this week had 2 Unify devices completely drop off of the cloud management console, and they are at sites that I can't go to right now because I'm 200 miles away from home. So it's not all roses, right? But they're still working, they're still passing traffic. I just can't manage them until presumably I go to them and flip the power. So not everything's perfect.
Meanwhile, I have finally fixed my issue with Apple devices on the TP-Link access points. And it turns out the solution was get a proper router and not use the ISP router.
No.
Who'd have known that those Virgin Media routers are terrible?
Chris would have known that. And he would have told me repeatedly about that until I actually bit the bullet and bought a proper router.
Yes. As I said to Joe, when I used to run my business, I wouldn't work for someone if they didn't put it in modem mode. And I'm not joking. I'd say, we're going to put this in modem mode and you have to get something else. And if they said, no, I don't want to spend the money, I'd be like, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, the other house that I was talking about had a proper smoke test over Christmas with several iPhones, iPads, Macs, that sort of thing. And it all worked absolutely perfectly with the TP-Link stuff. I got absolutely no complaints. So I finally found, I think, the cause of my Apple device woes. And it turns out to be a shit ISP router. Chris, you were battling with Minecraft.
Not just Minecraft, just the whole thing. I set up an old laptop I used to record this show on Windows because it started developing sound artifacts, which is not a problem for a general user. My nephew has been bugging my sister for Minecraft. And because he might want to play Fortnite and anti-cheat, as you've covered on LNL, Windows. I'm sorry, I didn't go Linux. And I didn't want to be messing around with custom launchers for Minecraft. I wanted the official supported operating system. So I got a code. The first thing is I created accounts for the kids, but there's two of them. They're brother and sister. They're twins. My sister had forgotten his password. So when I went to reset it, it wouldn't let me. And then it said that I was a bot. And the only way to overcome that was to change my IP address. So I tethered to my phone and got his account created. But then when I went to do hers, it said it was a bot. And I was like, I'm running out of IP addresses. So I had to wire guard back to my house to get another IP address. So I was already losing my mind before I'd started. Then you have to buy, for Java Edition, you have to buy a voucher code for Minecraft because the child has to buy it, even though they're not allowed to buy it because it's a child account. So they have to have a code that they redeem to get it. So then we got it up and running, which took ages, by the way, because my sister's 4G is really difficult in the house. This is on Christmas Eve at like 1 o'clock in the morning. And then I thought I got everything running. I opened it and then it said, oh, you can't play with your friends. No, because that the default setting is that you can't play online. You can't play with your friends. You can't share any online content. You can't do anything on the internet. So you go to the Microsoft parental controls. There's nothing in there. You have to look up one of those awful Microsoft customer support posts, which is like maybe someone that works for Microsoft saying, hello, I'm a Microsoft support specialist. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you work for Microsoft. Who the hell knows? But let's give it a go. No, you have to go to Xbox.com and then you have to log in as the parent and then manage the child's account and grant them permission to play Minecraft. This is one of the most popular games in the world for children. And it's literally like losing limbs to get it working. And I found people on Reddit who are just absolutely losing their mind, the same as me. And I hate it because then when we got it running, his sister said, I want to play it too. No, it's attached to his account. You have to buy a whole other copy for the other child or let him, her play as him. And like, if I ever meet someone from Microsoft who is responsible for this, I'm going to shout at them like this for 5 minutes and they will not be able to leave the room. It makes me so angry. I cannot believe it.
I have to admit, Chris, that I also had to reset a Microsoft password over Christmas. And this was for my nan because she'd forgotten her Hotmail account password. And had just assumed that she hadn't had any email since last March, which clearly wasn't true. And it wasn't until she came to buy someone a Christmas gift that she realized that she didn't get the confirmation email, then assumed that Marks and Spencer had scammed her, which also clearly not the truth. Anyway, so she also got identified as a robot, but her main internet connection in her house is an LTE connection, so probably lots of people sharing the same IP through CG NAT.
Carrier grade NAT, yeah.
Yeah. Resetting the password for her, and actually for any normal person, completely impenetrable. So it's, help us use these arrows to move the icon to where this shape is auditing the sun.
Yes, 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 I'm with you here.
What does that even mean?
This happened to me for everything that I did with this stupid thing the whole time. Turn the piece of bread so it's facing the same way as the finger. I'm going to shove the finger and the bread where it doesn't shine. Like, honestly, so anger-inducing.
I actually had to use the accessibility option to get the audio version of this, where it was then playing me, I shit you not, 64 different pieces of music. Which one of these pieces of music was repeating? Was it 1, 2, 3, or 4? I just want to reset this password. They'd already sent an SMS to validate that she was who she said she was anyway. And she'd received the SMS and we'd entered the code. Just utter nightmare. I get it. She's on an LTE connection, but she could be on her phone. Just never again. I genuinely toyed with just telling her that it was gone. You don't have emails anymore. Sorry.
All right. I think we need some wins here to balance all this negativity. May you have some other wins.
All right. Well, I built 4 PCs, 2 of them remotely.
Well, as in you were remote hand. You said, do this, do that on a video call or?
Yeah, pretty much.
Huh. I was imagining you with one of those surgical robots that doctors use. That would be more impressive.
Like a bomb disposal, but for slotting exactly, in a graphics card.
So there are now several more PCs with AMD graphics cards and all AMD setups in them. And I went with AMD instead of Intel. Well, both because Intel's really, really bad at performance right now, but also AMD is just simpler. I mean, whether you want to run Linux or not, you don't have to mess with the P-core, E-core nonsense, which you also need to mess with on Windows, I've heard. If there are too many cores, some games just won't start up. Huh. And there's no trouble with the NVIDIA drivers, and yes, there are problems with that on Windows too, don't worry. So overall, yeah, just going AMD, all AMD, was the right option. Unfortunately, though, I didn't realize that DDR5 is still as bad as DDR4 was, like, for the first year that it came out. So I didn't check the qualified vendor list for the motherboard for the RAM I got them, and so they didn't work together. The systems will boot in everything with DDR5 at its default speed. It just won't do the overclock stuff, which is kind of a bummer, but all right, whatever. It's still DDR5. So that was a great success, and they are now very happy that they can see the red line on the floor in the lobby when they play Helldivers, which apparently just wasn't there on their old graphics settings. I built one of those computers for my brother, gave him that one, took back his old one. It's my old AM4 rig, and it had a Ryzen 7 1700 in it, you know, a 2017 processor at this point. And I upgraded it to a 2024 processor because AMD just lets you do that. So it's now rocking a Ryzen 7 5700X3D and my RX 7800 XT, and it eats.
So you just probably presumably had to upgrade the BIOS with the old chip in responsibly before and then just swap the chip out and it was all golden, right?
That was it. That was really amazing to me, is that was it.
Nice.
I had more stories, but I guess we're going to have to save it for another time.
Indeed, you've got to go back to work, so we should probably wrap it up there. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, but until then, I've been Joe.
I've been Chris.
I've been Gary.
And I'm still May.
See you later.